Like
I don't understand why you have to dig so deep into it.
And ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the one and only Mod State Podcast. Dude, I think we are full on in the 2020 cycle. Donald Trump had his big-ass rally in Greenville, North Carolina.
We were in the middle of a cycle. I mean, I wish I could say it's a monthly cycle, but...
It might be better.
It's not.
It might be better.
It would be. I mean...
God. Dude, yeah. It's... Well, okay. So it's been a bit of a whirlwind.
Yeah,
take a sip of this Perrier water before we dive into this.
There was a maelstrom today. This was typical GNO Greater New Orleans weather today. My brother-in-law and I are at his office, you know, for Garrett O'Brien. They do a lot of work for Planned Parenthood, and everybody knows the chaos going on there. It's another topic. And sunshiny, we get ready to step out to leave at 2 o'clock this afternoon. Been sunshiny all day, and it has in the last hour and a half. There's 4 to 5 inches of water around the car just from the rain.
Jesus.
It's like, what happened? You know? And that was the more normal part of the day, because I spent some of the morning watching the president's rally from, well, it's not yesterday here now, from his rally from the 17th.
Yes. The Greenville. Okay. It is really the rally that will define his candidacy, incumbency rather, over the next into 2020. I think there was,
if they don't disavow that, which I don't know.
He said he did, but I don't
the
know.
Thing about that, though.
Well, let's give some frame of references first. How about?
All right.
Okay, so let's just back the timeline up. The squad, and dude, I'm sorry, like. Regardless of how my political leaning is, the squad is the worst. I've seen it on Fox News, MSNBC, CNN. The squad.
It's their title.
Dude, it's horrible.
It's their title for themselves.
I just, you couldn't come up with, like, it just sounds so Gen Z, like, and I don't mean to poke fun at
Gen Z.
Sounds
like an 80s rock band.
It's like, we're the squad. Like, if you want anyone to take you seriously, like, I don't know.
Next up, we've got Flock of Seagulls and Mr.
Anyway, that's just my personal opinion. Like, I'm sure there's a bunch of people out there that really just get jazzed about the fact that it's the squad.
Well, you're racist because you're white in saying that.
Boy. Anyway.
Well, you saw the crap they pulled with Nancy Pelosi. It's like, really? She's a racist now? Okay.
We could go into the squad, but let's just break it down.
Then we fast forward. Yeah, skip a track.
Okay, so... what we do know is that for anybody, especially international listeners, the squad is 4 women, 3 of which have been born in the United States, 1 who was born outside the United States and became a naturalized citizen. And they are all women of color. That is true. And I believe it'd just be one of them is of the Islamic faith. So, a very diverse group of individuals, young women, and here's where it just goes off. So I don't know the exact days of the timeline, but what I can say, over the weekend, the president essentially tweeted out something in the lines of, if you hate our country so much, just go back to where you came from. Or maybe it was stronger than that. It was, these women, or they hate our country, and they should just go back to the countries or they should just go back to where they came from to essentially fix their countries, to fix those countries where they came from. Essentially touting, just borderline touting some pretty racist tropes of go back to where you came from. But it wasn't quite, it was very, very...
It wasn't that overt. It was dog whistling.
It was very dog whistling, but it was
gaslighting.
Yeah, that's true. Like when I heard that the president finally had some racist tweets, I was actually at work and I was like, oh man, like I just got to step off the floor and see this. Like what? Because everything that was popping up was racist tropes and this and that. And
disappointed, weren't you?
Well, I guess when I finally read it, it was like if they don't like this country, they hate it, they should go back from to where they came from. And there's a couple things about it that just didn't make sense. Three of them are, well, all four of them are citizens of the United States. Three of them were born here. Like, go back where? Like, it's just super confusing.
He covered himself to an extent because there is a crime problem like there is in every big city, but one could specifically point to the Somali dominant areas, the Somali immigrant dominant areas of the Twin Cities of Minnesota. And again, every big city has crime riddled areas. He could point to AOC being from New York City, which last I checked, they have a little bit of a crime problem. So it was gaslighty enough, if you will, that he could say, well, I didn't say specifically go to another country. I said, go back where you came from. I meant Minnesota. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, that's just enough. That's the way I was looking at it. But the more I really thought about it, I was like, dude, that's just because.
I'm not saying it wasn't racist. I'm saying he did provide himself with a bit of cover. If he didn't have the track record that he has currently, he could argue that.
Yes, but that's
would
the thing.
Would believe that given his track record?
That's the thing. So, and listen, I don't know what was worse. The tweets themselves or the reporters following around these Republican congressmen and senators going, hey, so what's up? Is this good or bad? And these guys, some of them are like, I'm sorry, I was at home over the weekend. Another one was like, well, here's the thing. What the president really blah blah blah. What the president really meant was just. It's like, dude, just shut up. Nothing you say right now is going to sound good. You need to say.
The most lucid response came from the Senate Majority Leader, who he kind of deflected. He didn't answer the question directly, but he said, "Look, I think we need to tone down the rhetoric across the board right now." Which technically true.
But that's my question was, who was that directed at? Like, hey, the left needs to tone it down, when it was the president that essentially said, told four women of color to go back to the place that they came from?
Well, I think he could easily point to the fact that, like we were saying earlier, okay, on the other side, I'm not saying that this makes the president right, okay? But what I'm saying is, when you've got one of these women of color, which, by the way, I've got melanin in my skin, too, so I'm not really sure what the hell that phrase even means. I know what they're getting at.
They're black. But,
yeah, I mean, sure. But the reality of then turning around and saying, them mouthing off on Twitter against their centrist colleagues, they got singled out by the Speaker of the House because they're women of color. Like, get the hell out of here, AOC. Mm. You know, so that's where I could take that whole, this needs to be toned down across the board. Like, the race card is getting just played.
That's not what Mitch McConnell meant.
Mitch McConnell doesn't care. I hate to break that.
No, he doesn't. He's just a bored turtle up there going, "Oh my God, what is happening?" So
Mitch McConnell is about power.
Yes. So
he's a tactician. He doesn't care.
So here's the thing. What's your gut reaction to the entire thing? Because there's more that we'll talk about here. Because ultimately, what bothers me about this entire thing is whether like. I've said it before. I don't like the president. However, do I think the president's just...
You hide your feelings rather well.
Thanks. Do I think the president is racist? Like in the traditional sense, Jim Crow racist? No. I think he's a narcissist asshole, and he's exhausting. And I think he did just enough... Okay, remember a couple podcasts ago, when Tucker Carlson couldn't think of anything else to say about AOC and just said, she hates America. She just hates America. Well, look, this is exactly what I predicted. Here's the president, can't think of anything else to say about someone who's just fundamentally ideologically different from him other than she hates America. And you know who that panders to? That panders to the dumbest of his base, that she hates America. It panders to the least intelligent denominator in the base, because they can't figure out why they don't like her, but because someone in the media and the president said she hates America, then she just must hate America. She hates it. It's like, wait, just because somebody differs from you in terms of an opinion and how things should be run. They hate America. But this is exactly what happened. We went from Tucker Carlson to the President of the United States, who genuinely probably doesn't think they hate America. He could give two shits. That's the
I was about to say.
The President, he doesn't care. He does not care. That's the thing. He didn't give a shit about any of this. He just knows what to say, and he knows how to rile people up. Which then we fast forward to Greenville, North Carolina. And
where I would say that the only area, and I know you did cover this in the back end of that, but I would say there was any error in what you say is, and you, again, you did address in the back end, but I don't think this is about Trump's ideology, the president's ideology,
Doesn't have an ideology.
I don't think he has one. I think he is his ideology. His cult of personality, it's about him to him. He's pandering to a base. He no more cares about the poor people in Alabama or North Carolina that he would send his own children to start the Mars colony. Okay. Yeah. It's just, that's not who he is. He's an ideology of one.
Yeah.
He's a moral nihilist. Okay. He's transactional. He doesn't care. So in the traditional sense, no, I don't think he's a racist. I think he's stoking fires. He's poking tigers. And that's where we come to the rally.
Mm-hmm. Now this is why I hope that maybe for one second that there was an intelligent like spark that went off in the president's head. Maybe there was something somewhere that when during this rally, what we're going to talk about, he thought, maybe I just pushed this a little bit too far. Like, lock her up is pretty innocuous. Like, it's funny. It's pretty silly. It's kind of stupid. And then now that it's 2019, it's just borderline.
Yeah, it's like Call Me Maybe. Yeah. It was good the first 1,500 times.
It's now irrelevant, okay?
Right. Nobody wants to hear Carly Rae Jepsen anymore. All right.
So, and I'll let you kind of do the play-by-play, but I caught the rally. Like, I caught part of it in the break room at work. And I won't lie, I got the chills. I got the chills
when
thousands of people started chanting, what was it? Send her back. Send her back. Like, send her back. Just frothing, evangelical, right-wing, fanatic, Second Amendment-toting people. Just send her back, frothing at the mouth. It reminded me of the, like, iconic desegregation photo of the young black girl walking to the school. And just these white people were just screaming at her, just absolutely screaming. I mean, that's what it just felt like. It was like, Jesus. And there wasn't a person they were necessarily screaming at. It was, but it just was bizarre. It was just, and that to me was like the true, tiger being poked. It was not fun and games anymore. It wasn't, like really pandering. All of a sudden, the worst side of America just like nationalism and populism and ethnocentrism all in one chant was just like, Jesus.
I think he realized that. Now, what he chooses to do with that realization, because here's the problem he has now, is that even though he's trying to walk back that, because he didn't start the chant. I watched it.
Yeah, you give you what was your reaction when, like, of him? What did you observe?
Well,
what do you think?
A quote from this. I want to give people a little bit of a context here of how non-sequitur this was. The man went from talking about 14 seasons of The Apprentice to then talking about, well, I mean, we couldn't have done any more talking about legislative achievements. I'm going, okay, what those things have to do with one another?
So what you're saying, it was basically an unarticulated stream of consciousness rally.
That's, more or less, yes. Okay, and that's cool. That's not a critique; it's an assessment. But this is a direct quote from the President of the United States. Okay, so for those who are offended by this kind of language, I'll remind you again: this is the President of the United States. I said, you know, you don't like me, and I don't like you. I never have liked you, and you never liked me. But you're going to support me because you're a rich guy. And if you don't support me, you're going to be so goddamn poor you're not going to believe it. Those are his words. A rally at which, by the way, he said goddamn twice. Now, I dare say, I don't think that any of the squad or Nancy Pelosi, Speaker Pelosi, or President Obama could have gotten away with, just throwing that out there.
Two evangelicals.
Right. Who were foaming at the mouth in support of him. So I'm wondering, I asked my brother-in-law earlier, I said, do you think if he were to repeat what John Lennon said, hey, and juxtapose, you know, or transposed it for his own time, you know, I'm more popular than Jesus Christ. Would his followers abandon him then?
No.
Or would they find a way to justify that? But that's just a hypothesis. But when the chant broke out, I noticed it was genuine because he stopped talking.
Which doesn't happen.
Right. It doesn't happen. When the chant first broke out in a section, there was genuine surprise on his face. It was something that, yeah, okay, if he had any part of this, he, for once, A, shut up, and B, looked surprised by something. But then it was almost like there was this, the cult of personality thing, it was like a Wi-Fi connection of sorts, the only way I can explain it, almost like a sudden spiritual connection between him and this crowd, where he then looks over to other sections, and then immediately they picked up the thought and started chanting along with that other section, so that eventually, if it wasn't 8,000 out of the 8,000 people in the arena, in the crowd chanting it, it was damn close. And it wasn't Zeppelin Field, it wasn't the Nuremberg rallies by any means, but this was scary to me to see a nation that was forged out of people that came to get away from oppression and rebelled and threw off oppression, to not a quarter of a millennium later at a rally chanting for people like their forefathers to be discarded like trash. That was a little more than a little disturbing to me. I mean, that. And again, I'm not saying he fomented this, but he has a singular problem now.
Yeah.
And this is the problem he has. He's sure.
This.
He's disavowed it with a, you know, to a certain modicum.
Yeah. So, I mean, he did technically.
Can he, though, in the long run, walk this back? Or does he have to come to the realization that this cat's out of the bag?
Yeah, man. This is
Pandora's back in the box.
This could be. I mean, remember how we said these early Democratic debates are just rife with sound bites, etc. Well,
no, this is a sound bite.
This is all, and it's a grosser sound bite. I mean, even the sound bites you'll see that if they could potentially use of all those white women in Dallas talking about the president's racist tweets. I mean, I'm not going to lie. There wasn't an intelligent thing said amongst any of them. It just was.
Well, I mean, what did you want him to do? Quote Shakespeare?
I guess what I was hoping is that maybe these always Trumpers from Dallas might stop and just think about
they might disagree with them.
Might just maybe just once say, I think it was a little distasteful, but it was just mental gymnastics around what he really meant. Like, everyone's telling me about what the president really meant. I'm like, does anyone know what the president really meant? We never know what the president...
I don't know that he knows.
He doesn't even know what he means. So
he has a visceral connection, a lifeline to these folks, and that's what I mean. I don't know that he can truly walk this back now, because this is us and them, if you will. Those ladies can't say that he was wrong on any one point any more than the anti-fascist folks can say that he was right about any one point. The whole suit of armor for both sides would fall off. That's where we're at. You can't admit to any sort of wrong, because then you're admitting to every sort of wrong. Mm-hmm. That's how polarized, that's how binary we are now.
Yeah,
that's the trouble at this point.
It is a weird, weird spot. I mean,
you want to know what came to mind? You wanted to hear some intelligent thought here. Here's what came to mind, okay? And I'm sure you know what this is from. But the quote that came to my mind, the whole thing, as I sat back in the chair, closed the dialogue box on the web browser, I thought, from hell's heart I stab at thee. With my last breath I spit at thee. That's from Moby Dick, Ahab. Hmm. As he's at the very bitter end, stabbing at the white whale, nonetheless. That's honestly what, and I'm not saying that specifically about the president. I'm saying that about the binary where we are. President Trump is a symptom. I've said it before. I'm saying it again.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where we're at.
You know, moving forward, like I said, this...
Is there a moving forward?
I don't know, man. It's the def... Like, the collective group think on that side doesn't come together and say, hey, look, let's probably not chant this stuff. This is pretty... I mean, this is kind of like pretty un-American, right? This is borderline something, and I'm not sure that it's good. It's a little ethnocentric.
No, it's not who we are. Again, we came about as a country because we threw off oppression. And
not to mention, like, this is kind of not good PR, guys. Like, let's. I mean, we have moved from the fake news turning around and sort of threatening the media or just giving them the side eye to lock her up to now send her back. Like,
and by the way, there was another joke today, and I put joke in air quotes because when you kid about something every time you have a conversation, wouldn't you start wondering, Nate, if I kidded about, I don't know, just pick a topic, and it was kind of a cringe topic, you know, but then every time you and I texted and every time we did this, I made the same joke, you might after a while start to be, you know, wonder, man, is DaVinci really kidding?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, well, today, the rally on the 17th, he once again joked about staying past two terms.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that in and of itself would be innocuous if it wasn't juxtaposed with all the rest of this.
Yeah. So, you know, the things I've talked about over the last several months of just the narrative and the track record and the just sort of state of being that is him in the administration, he is just doing no... he's doing himself no favors to the point where you're literally hitting the nail on the head. It's like, man, this is like third rally where he's been like, yeah, just joking about staying longer than two terms. Oh yeah, send her back. Hates our country. It's just like, dude, this is
treason.
I'm sorry, this is playbook. It's playbook populism. It's playbook a lot of things that are pretty dangerous. And I don't want it to be that way. Like, I'm not a fear mongerer, but like, Jesus, is this?
I'm no populist, but I would say that's almost an insult to populism. This borders on aspirant authoritarianism.
Okay. It's the dangerous aspects of populism. That,
sure.
If that makes more sense. And I guess there's a couple things that I think are...
statism.
That worry me, and it's how far... And this is definitely fringe, right? I think people that show up at Trump rallies are most definitely... I don't know. I would think... I mean...
You damned well hope it is.
Well, who shows up to Bernie Sanders rallies? Like, they're pretty left, pretty left-leaning people. I'm going to call them fringes, like Antifa, but they're, like, pretty left-leaning. So I can imagine that Trump is the 8,000 people that want to show up on a sweaty, humid night in Greenville, North Carolina are pretty diehard Trump supporters. But I just, it worries me. Like, there's always going to be weird stuff that happens. And
well, okay, but, a hot, sweaty night, man. I'm out loosening my tie looking for hourglasses. Not looking for racist diatribes to let loose. Like,
no, I guess my question is how far as a society – I mean, I think it's a good case study in terms of –
So this, like, is a national game of limbo?
No, I think it's an interesting case study in terms of how far – a society can go hyped up on, or a faction of society can go hyped up on ideas, like very simple ideas.
Cult of personality,
like,
man.
Yeah, it is crazy. It's a beautiful case study. Tucker Carlson, who's just the spokesperson from Fox News,
really grinds your gears, doesn't he?
Dude, it really is feeding. It's that narrative that's feeding a lot of this. It's that hates America, socialism. I mean, if you could just stick at socialism, that's cool. But it's like, now you hate America, as if having some sort of ideological concept of how to govern a country or how to have it.
Hillary Clinton, and you killed Jesus.
I mean, this is the same people that protesting is treason, because if it's not protesting the thing I like, it's essentially treason and un-American. And now if you have an idea that just happens to differ from your idea, you now should be sent back to the place that you came from. Now, the other problem with this is that his own administration is jumping through effing hoops in the most disgusting ways. If Kellyanne Conway could just shut the F up and never come on television again. Did you hear what she said to a reporter? It's like,
no. Oh yeah. Where are you from?
What's your background? What's your heritage? What's your background? He was like, excuse me. Like this wasn't even part of the question. It's like, oh my God, how Stephen Miller, like Richard Spencer, can we get y'all? Like, why do we keep going this direction? Why do we keep, what is the benefit? I mean, is this the product of our entire immigration talk that's going on? Or where is this coming from?
Spencer is saying that the president's not going too far enough.
Yeah, that's true.
He said that it wasn't overt racist enough for him.
Which would be spot on with Richard Spencer. But I guess my point is, we're certainly...
Who's listening to him?
We're slowly tiptoeing a little closer to that rhetoric than we are the other way. Like, that's my question is, where is this coming from? Is this the ramp up? I guess what I'm saying is, this is 2019. We're not even at the end of 2019, and we're having send her back just like foaming at the mouth, screaming matches at the first Trump rally for his presidency, re-election. Like, what is going to happen over the next 18 months?
Think about this. My favorite film of all time is 1982 Ridley Scott's Blade Runner. Okay?
It is.
And at the
favorite.
Very beginning of that film, it says Los Angeles, November 2019. Okay? So we're 4 months away from that. And really, we're not too far off. Sure, there's not ever-roving flying police cars everywhere yet. But it's really, but when you look at that, I read the book behind it, of course, The Android's Dream of Electric Sheep, very, very dark, but neo-noir book by a brilliant writer, Philip K. Dick. And it was a little depressing in a sense, and the film was as well. It was a post-apocalyptic America, post-nuclear war. The climate's going absolutely crazy. But I've got to say, that November 2019, looking at the one the abyss we seem to be on the cusp of 4 months away, that November 19 looks to me a bit better than this one.
Fair enough. You paint an interesting picture, my friend. And you would have read the book behind Blade Runner. Okay.
Dark
so,
enough for you.
So. Let's move on just for my utter exacerbation.
That sounded a little weird.
It's my new thing, man. It's a new thing. It's a secret. I'll tell you offline. So there's a couple things. The last couple of minutes I wanted to take on discussing a bit about the squad, right? I've had a couple conversations with some folks. That are truly progressive, like unabashedly.
I bet they love me.
Deny, kind of science denying, like just unabashedly progressive, which is fine. I got nothing against. Well, like you know, kind of like to the point where, you sort of defy biology.
Didn't like vaccinations.
No, not like that. Just sort of. Well, we'll have it for another conversation. But anyway, there's nothing wrong with it. They're more than welcome to be just that. However, where I started having interesting conversations with them was surrounding the idea of what we need in terms of a progressive candidate. That really everyone should just get on board with progressive ideas, and that's going to be enough to win the election. To which I had many counter arguments to that. To say I don't know what poll you're looking at, where the pulse of the left is that everyone wants progressive ideas, and that's somehow going to win. But what
give them a hint? Pulse of the left is not Twitter.
No, it's not. Certainly not.
It's 15% of the party. I hate to break it to them.
If that really, yeah. If you would even consider them Democrat, I think it's just something morphed into something completely different. But what I'm noticing in this entire debacle, if you will, there's a huge spotlight on the squad. There's a spotlight on their relationship with Nancy Pelosi. They're fighting back and forth. I don't know. Like, I get the fact that they're technically only there for a short period of time. They've got to make the most of it prior coming. You know, obviously, we'll have to have a re-election bid. And so they need to get as much done as they can. They need to get as many ideas out there as they can. But is someone somewhere saying, like, hey, you know, there's a whole Democratic showdown going on. We really need to be thinking about possibly electing somebody who can beat Donald Trump. And we just need this to not be a huge deal right now. Like, we need to beat Donald Trump.
Circular firing squad.
So I'm certainly not saying that.
You're saying there needs to be some pragmatism to go with the idealism?
Just maybe a little bit in terms of what has any of the Democratic candidates said over the last week? Let's think. Oh, yeah, no one knows. Because this has eaten up all the oxygen. This has sucked up and consumed all of the oxygen. I think there was a couple sound bites of Kamala
Harris. He's brilliant, isn't he?
Yeah. There was a couple, maybe a couple snippets on CNN of Kamala Harris, like, saying something denouncing racism. Like, cool. All right. Yeah. So,
okay.
Cool. But yes, this is what I said. This guy's an effing genius. Even if he disavows this in the next rally, he says, let's take the high ground. Like, let's no more chanting. We're good. Like,
he'll find another trope.
Yeah, he will. But this guy is eating up all the oxygen, eating it all up. And you know what? The problem is with the groupthink is that over time, the more they hear send her back, oh, she hates America, there's going to be a bunch of suckers out there that are going to be like, I'm kind of digging what this guy's saying. Like, yeah, she hates America. You say it enough times, like, yeah, she hates America. Like,
how long until Mark David Chapman blows somebody's brains out, man? That's what I want to know. Is it going to be too far then for the Richard Spencers? Is there going to be any semblance of regret on Capitol Hill at that point?
Oof, I don't know, dude. And
I mean, God forbid that happened, but I mean, is that where we're headed? Because the congresswoman got met in Minnesota at the airport with those chants. You realize that, right?
Did she really?
Yes.
Jesus Christ.
Now, it wasn't thousands of people, but okay, two would have been too many.
Yeah, no.
Is that where this is headed? We're going to have a John Hinckley?
Dude, I don't know. Like, I feel that I've had a massive inability to articulate this episode, and then my thoughts have been all over the place.
Some loon willing to go to prison to act this out by proxy?
Dude, what I'm saying is I'm genuinely concerned over the next 18 months. And I don't mean because of some crazy group of 8,000 people that started a rant. It's just the repercussions. It's way bigger than that. It is way bigger than that. And anyone that's not taking it seriously
is
probably not paying attention or is going to be surprised at the state of this country in 15
years. Or they're supporting that.
Or they are. Or even just being a bit apathetic to the entire
thing.
This
is no time for that.
No, this is weird. This is unlike anything I've ever seen. And Trump got elected in 2016, 2017. So we've seen some weird shit. This is truly, in terms of what we thought was truly gone or was in the shadows enough, reemerged on the 17th in a really powerful, weird way.
That's what I mean. It's a national game of limbo. How low can you go? And I'm not picking on the president here. And again, I'm not saying that he fomented that. He curated that chant. Okay. But, and that's what I mean. I don't even know.
No, he didn't curate the chant personally.
I don't think he can rebuttal this.
I don't think so. Because any way that you try to disavow it in like a very,
they're going to say it's because the media intimidated him.
Which
his supporters are never going to, those diehards. I'm not talking about the people like me.
The media intimidated him. That would be the first time.
Okay, but you know they'll come up with anything.
I know. And whatever, that's for the 30% base. It's just, it's.
And we're not talking about the swing voters like myself that voted against Hillary Clinton here.
No. This is the equal opposite reaction. That's what I'm worried about.
Right. That's where this to me has gotten out of control, because I don't know as a nation. I mean, I'm sure there's always a coming back for this. Okay. There's always a coming back.
And I hope there's reconciliation of some sort.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you look at the recovery the world, the globe has had since World War II. There's absolutely a coming back from this, but this is like an a generational sort of existential crisis. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, obviously, but I want it to be because we as a country decide to some degree to find some semblance of, if not middle ground, if that's too wishy-washy sounding for people, a certain amount of live and let die, and let's not completely discard the what our founders fought and bled for.
Yeah.
It has served us very well.
So I'll ask you this, and I think that's eloquent. I'll ask you kind of this last question, and you can think about it if you're not sure. I've been stewing on this. You brought up an interesting point of generational. There's an awful lot of those people that were yelling that happened to be a little bit older than me, and I wonder how much of this is generational in terms of boomers and older and middle-aged, if you will, millennials. So, you know, 80s, mid-80s, late-80s, millennials, and this sort of globalization that we've grown up in and lived with, where we can really look past, we see ideology not necessarily as or the same socialism as something as dangerous as maybe that generation has. And so when we hear socialism, we're not as apt to think of the same danger that maybe the baby boomer generation would have, that it's more of an ideology, that well, we've seen it. Like, I just think that in a globalized world that we've grown up in, not quite digital natives, but pretty close, that there's this, we've just never grown up in an ethnocentric world. And a lot of these folks, we haven't. There's a lot of folks on that I referenced before these.
I think this is a segue into another episode.
I think so.
However, I'll give you my gut reaction to that is sort of a blanket response, but I hearken back to one Napoleon Bonaparte, who he said, "Remember, a man will fight harder for his interests than for his rights." And I think that's a generality, but I think it's proving itself true here, because there are those who are willing to sacrifice some of their freedoms. There's a certain amount of, we're willing to give up freedom for security. And in this case, it's like an emotional security blanket of protect us, deliver us from evil, protect us from the other. Mm-hmm. And that other is, in their mind, an anti-democratic and anti-American ideal, whether that's true or not. That's what's being presented to them, and that's what they choose to believe here. And so in that sense, they're willing to fight harder for what they perceive as their interests than for retaining the very rights that people have previously spilled blood to preserve for them over the generations. And that's, to me, a short answer to that. And I do think there's a coming back from it, but there's no app for that.
Yeah. No. I think you're spot on. Well, that was one of the most articulate things you've ever said. So with that...
Well, thank you, sir.
Indeed.
It's great to be here with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We had some little technical difficulties at the beginning, but felt it was right to drive through with this one and just get our feelings and thoughts out there.
Thad.
But yeah, with that, I definitely think we need an episode on that, because that's what one thing that I've been trying to figure out is it, what is it exactly? Is it this generational? Like, why am I not as, I don't want to say gullible is the right word, because that's not the right, that's not the nice word to use, but
why? You're more suspicious of indecorous behavior.
Yeah, maybe that's the word. Maybe I'm a little bit more skeptical, a little bit more suspicious of things, just instead of just point blank. But, you know, that's for another. Not,
this is episode 199, man.
Holy crap. Yeah, well, maybe we'll do this at the big blowout 200. So, holy crap.
Man, it's going to be a treat.
Indeed, indeed. So, all right, my friend, we're at 40 minutes. My voice is shot, and I'm going to bed. So, as always, this is an honor and privilege to do with you week in and week out. So, until next time,
au revoir.
We'll see you.